Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. And a beautiful Shabbat it is. And so glad to see everybody. What an interesting Torah HaFtorah and Besorah passage we have today. And from it, I'd like to answer the question, you know, what exactly does spiritual maturity look like? What does it look like? And so I'd like to explore at least one aspect. I mean, obviously, there's more to spiritual maturity that can be covered in one sermon, but the question's an important one. What does spiritual maturity look like? Now, Dave, a couple of weeks ago, mentioned a gentleman that I'd like to talk about a little bit, and his name was, he was called Israel Salanter, Rabbi Israel Salanter, and he lived in the late 1800s. He was the founder of what's called the Musar movement. And again, a couple of weeks ago, maybe you remember, Dave spoke to us about Rabbi Salanter and the Musar movement, the Jewish self-help movement, if you will. Israel Salanter is known to have done something very interesting. He would have a piece of paper in each pocket, one on each side, and on the one piece of paper was written, "I am created in the image of Hashem." Very lofty. But listen to what was on the other piece of paper. "I am created from the dust of the earth." Lofty? Not so lofty. "I'm created out of the stuff the worms like to crawl around in." On the other hand, "I'm created by the very fashioner, maker and fashioner of all things." Now, why did he do this? Why did he walk around with these two pieces of paper? Well, let's think about it a little bit, and let's think of it in terms of a profound contrast between our Torah portion and our Besorah, our New Covenant passage. Let's think about the Torah portion. You know the story. Balak is concerned that Israel will attack him, and he realizes he doesn't have the troops to be able to withstand an attack, and not only that, the reputation of Israel was, wow, wherever they go, they just beat everybody, starting with the Egyptians. And so he figures, let me get Balaam, and he's known to be able to put curses on people. Let's get him to curse the people. So, again, long story short, Balaam doesn't come initially. Balak finally persuades him to come. There's the incident with the donkey. You know about all that. Then it says that Balak brought me from Aram. This is the first oracle, or the first of several speeches or prophecies that are given. And Balak brought me from Aram, the king of Moab, from the eastern mountains. "Come," he said, "curse Jacob for me. Come denounce Israel." But how can I curse those God has not cursed? How can I denounce those whom the Lord has not denounced? "From the rocky peaks I see them. From the heights I view them. I see a people who live apart and do not consider themselves one of the nations. Who can count the dust of Jacob or number even a fourth of Israel? Let me," he says, "die the death of the righteous, and may my final end be like theirs." Exalted! What a people Israel is! You feel a little proud? Good! It's not an accident if you're Jewish. It's part of this plan that God has, calling a unique people into existence. And we go, wow, isn't that fantastic? What a picture. Now, let's look at another picture. This is from our Besorah portion, and we get a very, very different image. "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate, knowing it was out of self-interest that the chief priests had handed Yeshua over to him. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have Pilate release Barabbas instead. "What shall I do then with the one you call the king of the Jews?" Pilate asked them. "Crucify him," they shouted. "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him!" Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them, and he had Yeshua flogged and handed him over to be crucified. Not such a lofty picture. Here we have the leadership, a segment of the Sanhedrin, calling for the death of the king of Israel. Very different picture than we have in our Besorah reading. But what I want to suggest to you is that spiritual maturity involves holding on to opposites which are both true and not letting either go. It's an attitude. It's a way of approaching life that I want to suggest to you. And so let's look at a couple of negative examples here. And the most obvious one is the national political scene. Do I hear an amen? Well, you agree? I mean polarization like crazy. People in Congress not talking to each other. People on the left vilifying everyone who could possibly imagine that they would want to give Donald Trump a shot. People on the right vilifying the left as if people who stand for the things that a liberal stands for are going to be the demise of the country. I mean, don't you hear it everywhere? Right? It's not a picture of maturity. It is a picture of the kind of polarization that is not helpful. But it's about the best example I can come up with. So, what exactly does maturity look like in specific terms? And here, just appealing to the idea of Musar, okay? This Jewish self-help movement, but that, in a sense, is a little too superficial a way to look at it, you know? It's not just reading a book with a principle and you just go do it. It's a discipline, and it runs very, very deep, okay? And so, in the way of expressing the Musar view, we have the midot. We have different aspects, ways of living that we understand that each midah, that's the singular, has kind of a complementary or even we could say an opposite. And both need to be considered. The basic idea, again, giving you just a word that you might want to tuck away, hishtavut, it's a kind of moderation, a kind of equanimity that tries to see where the truth is here and where the truth is there and seeks to live in terms of both sides of the equation without letting either so dominate that you can't see any good elsewhere. And you know, here's just an example. Have you ever changed a tire on a car? Well, not driving, I have not changed a tire on a car, but experts tell me that the way you do it is when you put the new tire on, you don't tighten each lug nut one after the other around the tire. Instead, how do you do it? You have to tighten opposites. The only way to get that tire on there securely is to tighten here and then tighten here and then go here, but then go here. You follow what I'm saying about that? So it's kind of an example of the kind of thing that we're talking about. But let me get real specific for you. What does spiritual maturity look like for us? What does it look like? Well, it might start with this. We don't rationalize away the rough edges. Mark 15, the passage that we read tells part of the story, and it's real, and it will not do for us as a community to say, well, you know, it was really just the Romans. Well, it was the Romans. And in God's mercy, and this was pointed out to me about 45 years ago at one of the very first Bible studies I ever went to, led by a Messianic Jew, he said, you know, in God's mercy, he didn't allow our people to actually lay a hand on Yeshua. It was the Roman soldiers who did it. But nonetheless, it would be a rationalization to say that we had nothing to do with it. Actually, what we find in this passage, and in the other passages that describe the same thing, what we find is the whole world becomes accountable before God. The Romans represent the nation, the Gentile nations, and we as his people Israel. And everyone was against the Lord and his anointed at that point. There's none righteous, no, not one, to quote a passage kind of based on this idea. But it will not do to say, well, it wasn't our fault. No, we were involved in some sense. That is we, meaning our leaders, and whatever implications flowed from that. But it will not do to do what we find among many people in the religious world, and that is to blame the Jews for deicide. You killed your king. That will not do. It will not do. Everyone was involved, symbolically and actually in a very real sense. And so what does spiritual maturity look like? It says, we can't get rid of either side of the equation. Both are true. This is an element of, to be able to do this is spiritual maturity. We've got to resist certain impulses, like, I love this one, confirmation bias. Do you ever hear that phrase before, confirmation bias? It's a great phrase. I just love it. It means you stick to your story no matter what the facts are because you don't want to be embarrassed by being shown that you could be wrong about something. It's confirmation bias. And it is why I want to commend to you an element of what I consider to be spiritual maturity. I really don't like it. It is not helpful when people get on Facebook and say the meanest things about people they disagree, not individuals, but ideas that they disagree with, and they have debates on Facebook. I want to tell you, it is so unhelpful because you don't have the dynamic of sitting with another person, of hearing and feeling the other side of the equation, and because you commit yourself publicly, it is extremely difficult to say in the course of the debate on Facebook, you know, tell you the truth, I think you were right and I was wrong. Very hard to do because it's hard because you are afraid of being shamed because you put yourself out there so obviously. But I want to suggest that spiritual maturity doesn't do that. I want to really encourage you not to do that type of thing. We've all gotten better about that in recent times. I don't like social media for that purpose. Social media has its place, but not there. And so I just want to suggest to us that spiritual maturity means sitting in the complexity of things and starting with a sympathetic attitude as best we can toward those who have a different perspective on a particular matter. Then what we do is we choose a committed life with genuine humility and a greater capacity to love because we haven't just blown off the other perspective. We've been willing to sit with it and say, well, maybe there's something to it, but we're not immobilized. It's not the kind of thing where, well, this one says this and this one says that and I don't know what to do. I'm just going to sit here and not do anything. No, we are called to a committed life. Ultimately, you have to make a decision about things. But it starts with an attitude of holding both in your pocket. I was made from the dust of the ground. I am made in the image of God, and so is everyone else I relate to. So at Ruach, we really try and do this, and I'm pretty proud of us all. I really am. I mean, I like the fact that we are going for it in terms of God's supernatural, I like to call this supernatural self-disclosure, that we're going for it in terms of healing prayer and seeking what God does supernaturally. But many of us
are into eating the right way and taking vitamins and seeking God's healing through natural means. We don't set those things apart. They all go together. God operates towards generally according to certain laws of the universe that he sets up, but he can choose to suspend those if he wants to. Both. We embrace both. It is the both. How about this one? We embrace Ahavat Yisrael. Ahavat Yisrael means the love of our people, Israel. But we also embrace love for the historic community of believers in Yeshua, the historic church. There are some Messianic Jews who emphasize one side or the other too much. And it's not helpful. Listen, if there were no Jews, there'd be no Yeshua. But if there was no church, there'd be no record of Yeshua. What do you think of that? It's the truth. It wasn't the Jewish community that codified or wrote down the... it was the Jewish members of the Jewish community who gave us the Besorah. No question about that. All of the guys who wrote, with the possible exception of Luke, were Jewish. But what about who copied it carefully? Who made the thousands of manuscripts that can be compared so that we have an accurate picture today? That was not our people. That was a gift to Israel that God gave to be mediated through the nations for us. There'd be no testimony for Yeshua in the world if it wasn't for his community. It will not do, if we want to be spiritually mature, to ignore either side of the equation. Is that easy? It is not easy. That's why I think our identity is one of the most profoundly difficult identities to maintain in the Western world. It is incredibly tough. Are we right? I think we are, about the foundational things that we stand for. So both are important. How about this one? It's part of the ethos of Ruach Israel. We really strive for excellence. We really want to do things well. But you know what? We don't always do things so excellently. So rather than get uptight and create an uptight environment where everyone's judging everybody else's level of excellence, we have a benign attitude toward one another that goes, hey, we're giving it our best shot. It's okay. Do you see how both are part of maturity? Go too far one way and you baptize your mediocrity. Go too far the other way, you create an intense judgmental environment where no one can grow because everyone's afraid of looking bad before other people. I think we do pretty good with it. How about this one? Sometimes the leadership has to be really tough about certain things. But most of the time we try not to be tough, but try to just cut one another a break. It's related to the other point I just made. Both are important. If you don't cut people a break, you end up with nothing. On the other hand, if everything is okay, then you end up living a non-loving life. Sometimes you got to be really tough and call things as they are and say, hey, listen, guy, you're out of line and that's all there is to it. Both are important. I'll give you one more. And I think we do it well. I really do. I think that we have a strong, decisive leadership in our congregation. On the other hand, we really try and democratize things and let lots of people do stuff. All right. In conclusion, what is spiritual maturity? It's being able to hold on to opposites in your relationships as husband and wife, as a congregation, in every sphere of human activity, in your inner world, in your kugala up here. It is being able to say, I hold this principle, but my little window of self-doubt is always open, saying maybe the guys on the other side of the aisle or the women there have something to say too. And I believe that that is one of the elements that elevates everything, whether it's a society, a congregation, or any group of people. I like to think of it this way, and I've mentioned this before, but I'm just going to share it with you one more time. I like to think of Yeshua, and it's a painful example, but one that's important, and that is him stretched on the execution stake, on the cross. And I like to think of him stretched as kind of a embedded in that historic reality with all of its implications for us as a community, there's a metaphor embedded in it. Yeshua is stretched between opposites, and it's painful and it's tough. And he dies in that state, but 3 days later, he's resurrected to new life. The first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. The down payment in history that all is going to be fantastic for those who love him and follow him. And it's a metaphor for us. We are called to get stretched between the polarities of opposite claims for truth and to recognize that sometimes there's some good stuff on either side of the equation. And it's an uncomfortable place to be. And you still have to make decisions even before you've come to absolute clarity on where the point is. And you die in that discomfort, but you're resurrected to new understandings and new ways of looking at things, and you move ahead, and you become more mature, and you become an independent thinker, and you're not as dragged along by societal patterns that just bombard us through advertising or whatever the mechanism might be. It's a great way to live. And I want to just challenge us all this way. Let us all commit ourselves to the ways of maturity, seeking the good in the complexity, going for truth with the humility that truth deserves. And if we do, I think our lives together are going to be even better, even greater. And I think when we meet him, he'll say, "Atta girl, atta boy. You guys really tried to live for truth. You tried to do it the right way. And now I just want to welcome you into the place where, as far as we can tell from this side, the major ambiguities are gone. Just unmitigated love, joy, peace, and growth as well, however that all works out." And so I leave you with that as one key to spiritual maturity. Shabbat Shalom.
And the descendants of your people, Israel, be those who know your name and study your Torah for Messiah.